This is the People's Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Vic Nizar and Randy Janda.
Final hour of the show. Vic Nizar, Randy Janda. Canucks Central, an hour away. Satyr Shah, Dan Riccio. Bruce Boudreau going to be on the show later today. Fresh off of a announcement to say, I'm back.
Awesome announcement as well. His media availability from the golf course.
Crushing it.
In Pennsylvania on Friday. We'll see. Maybe he's on the golf course again today. Off season, man. You're going to put in the work on the analytics later on. You're going to put in work later on, but you need a week or so to kind of chill out.
He didn't say he was going to do it tomorrow.
No.
It's on the to-do list. It's a summer. And, you know, when we go on holiday, I think you're a big guy like this too.
Yeah.
When you get to the airport to go travel, you buy a book at the bookstore there, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I like to read.
Yeah.
I can confirm I can read.
But do you buy a book at the departing airport for the plane and, you know, your time
off? I used to do that, and then I realized I read, but I don't, like, go all and finish the book. So I have a bunch of books that I've bought at airports that I never finished. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to take one from home.
Right. I try to just buy one at the airport.
Okay. Yeah, no, I did that, and I was like, when you're on vacation, how often do you actually read the book? Like, you read some of it.
I mean, it depends what type of holiday you're taking. If you're doing, like, hey, excursions and all this stuff.
Yeah, you're not reading.
You're not reading. No, but if you're just hanging out by a beach.
Yeah, you're having a couple of drinks, maybe. But if you're, like, your vacation is centered around drinks, nobody's buzzing reading, you know, Don Quixote.
Is that the first book you could think of?
I don't know why, man. Big Cervantes fan.
Let's talk to Mike Buta, who joins us, Sportsnet's NHL analyst, a longtime NHL exec as well. Mike, when you're breaking out on holiday, that's definitely not Mike Buta.
He heard the Cervantes.
Enough of this.
I'm out. He heard Don Quixote and said, I'm out. Clearly, I've called into the wrong show. This is some nerdy show on Vancouver radio that I've never been on before.
He's like, Count of Monte Cristo or bus.
A Tale of Two Cities or I'm out.
Pride and Prejudice.
What is going on?
War and Peace. I can just keep going on.
Yeah. It's good to know that people are fans of classic literature here.
Or not a fan, in particular.
Check out the big brains on YouTube, man. Wow.
What?
Hey, man.
Naming four classical books?
Hey, it's more than a lot of guys at the station could do, I bet.
Come on. I got more faith in people than that.
Do you?
All right.
Do you?
Maybe, maybe not. All right, now we have Mike Buta joining us, Sportsnet's NHL analyst, longtime NHL exec, as well. We were just saying, Mike, when you go on holiday, you know, the off-season starts, and you got to take some time for yourself. What are you packing? Are you taking a book on the travels with you?
Only if it's Man of La Mancha, for sure.
There we go. There we go.
I'm a huge Don Quixote fan, and most guys are just chasing the impossible dream anyway, so why not keep her going?
Unbelievable, Mike. That is one hell of a way to start up an interview.
There you go. So we wanted to bring you on today to talk about, you know, because Canucks are in this spot right now, and, you know, they didn't make the playoffs, and we're all excited about what's going on in the series, but, you know, for a lot of teams right now, there's still work to be done. This time between the end of the season and the end of the playoffs, what are you doing right now? Obviously, the Canucks had their scouting meetings in the last 2 weeks here. For teams that didn't make the playoffs or the teams that just got eliminated, the work that starts, what's the process here?
Well, I think the teams that generally have success are, like, this stuff's all in place. Even the teams that are still playing are already planning for next year. I think in the Canucks case, I mean, it was such a positive turn of events when they made their changes. I mean, from, you know, Bruce obviously coming in and Jim and the general manager change. I mean, I think it's just the whole excitement in the city. I mean, making the nice run at the playoffs, I think it allows the general manager and the staff to look at, you know, to look at the team and watch it under pressure situations and look forward at, you know, we always called it the Dean Lombardi. There were, you've got your boxes of guys that you that are either they're unrestricted or areas that you really look at, and obviously the goaltending is phenomenal in Vancouver, so that's not an issue. But just boxes you want to fill that are key moving forward, not only for next year but in the long term, and how they're going to fit into the salary cap. Obviously, there's a big decision they have to make with regards to the contract with Besser. I believe he's an RFA, so those decisions are going to be huge. But I do think, at least in Vancouver's case, that you're sitting there feeling pretty darn good about the, you know, the breath of fresh air in the city and how competitive the team was down the stretch moving forward. So, I mean, it's different for everybody. I mean, the teams that you've got, certain teams that, you know, expended a lot of assets to get into the playoffs. Some of them were successful. Some of them weren't. So it depends on where your team's at in their growth and development. Whether their changes were made during the season to, like, I mean, obviously Montreal and Vancouver made changes during the season. Now you see some teams, they kind of had their internal evaluation. I mean, clearly there's a different bar for success in Vegas. Like, I mean, Pete DeBoer's arguably won more rounds than anybody in the last, probably Barry Trotz in the last, you know, 5-6 years of coaching, and they've decided to move in a different direction there. You've got the Torontos of the world. I guess everybody's going to be fine there. That was announced today. I know in our situation with Carolina, obviously a huge win. It could have gone either way. We're looking at our team and looking at, it's really the product right now on the ice. That's all in the hands of the coaches, which lineup they're going to do. And I mean, the managers have already put their taxi squads in place to back up should there be some injuries. But you're looking at your roster next year. I mean, the next big date, obviously, for a team like Vancouver is going to be the draft. I mean, they had their little spectacle of where it fell. I don't even remember where they're going to be picking. But obviously, the draft is the next big event. And I think when you look at the league, at the deadline, there was a lot of speculation about a lot of RFAs and a lot of really, really quality players that still have term in their contract that were available that, you know, teams really didn't want to make moves at the deadline. For example, if you're going to trade a first-round pick for a really good player, you want to know exactly where that first-round pick's going to be. You don't want to take a chance on moving a pick at the deadline and then finding that team's going to get hot and move up 10 spots in the draft. So now the draft's locked in. You can look at it and actually know exactly where the pick is going to be if you're going to move for a pick. And I think there's going to be a lot of talk about some of the players that were available at the trade deadline, you know, vis-a-vis guys like, I mean, Chychrun's name was out there and stuff like that. And whether they're traded or not, I think that's going to heat up again. And all those conversations are going on between general managers, you know, while they're watching the playoffs in the back of their mind and getting ready for that draft.
Mike, we were talking about this a little bit earlier on in the show as well, especially when we look at the center position. It feels like via free agency or trades, there's a lot of names that potentially could be out there. Evgeny Malkin in Pittsburgh is somebody that's being talked about today. But from, you know, the sense that you get in those executive circles, is this a season or an off season where there's going to be a lot of movement? It certainly feels like that from a distance.
It all depends. I agree with you. And I mean, you're darn tootin' about this centerman position. I mean, you've got Malkin, obviously, and then you look at, you know, you see the Nazem Kadri's of the world. I know in our situation, Trocheck, and I'm sure I'm missing some names of guys, but it's such a value position. And obviously, most C1s are number one centermen. You can only get them through the draft, but you're starting to see, you know, a plethora of C2s and lock C3s that are going to be available. And I guess it's the old salary cap. It's not only, I mean, there's obviously a lot of teams that are willing to spend up to the cap. There's, I mean, the term cap hell, I guess, is being thrown around in quite a few places. So it doesn't matter what you want. It's not so easy when you don't have any space to add. I mean, again, being a Toronto born, when you hear the basic fans say who they want moved out and who they want moved in to get this team over the hump, it's just not contractually or cap possible to do that. But it's fun for fans, I guess, not as much fun for management teams. But yeah, I think there's going to be a ton of movement. But again, it comes down to one player is going to markets that they want to be in. And for example, using a team like Ottawa, who has a ton of cap space, obviously with Mr. Melnyk passing, And in the past, them not really being willing to spend up to the cap, whether the new ownership group or that's in there wants to give the freedom to management to start spending. There's teams like that that clearly have, you know, a team that seems on the cusp of doing some special things, but they've got to be willing to spend to do it. So it'll be interesting. It'll be fun. I mean, you look at teams like at Montreal that have new management and some great young players. You see it, you know, with Vancouver that seems to be on the cusp of some of your young stars. I mean, then there's a team like Arizona that's still a ways out. And, you know, I mean, even if you have the money, is it going to be appealing to a free agent that's played year for years to go play in front of 5,000 people? There's a whole bunch of different decisions that are going to go into free agents. And for most of them, they've done so exceptionally well that this is their first time testing the market, and they're going to have a lot of good decisions. But it's most of them that haven't won want to go to markets where they have a window to win. It's not just about money at this stage of their career, but they definitely will want to get paid. There's not too many guys that are doing hometown discounts anymore.
You mentioned the Leafs there for a minute. Just the overall fallout from that. You know, Brendan Shanahan, you know, was back in his group again today. The temptation to make changes for the sake of changes, or do you just look at this and say, you know what, we're having successful years, and we're going up against very strong teams consistently, and it's the playoff format more so than anything. How tough is it to, you know, force the hand and make changes, or do you just go down the path of patience all over again?
Well, that's entirely up to them. I mean, I make changes just for the sake of making changes, to me, is a statement where you don't want to make changes, and you believe so much in your group that you don't want to explore to see if there might be another thought process or a route some fresh mind wants to take that's going to get you over the hump. And clearly, I mean, loyalty is a great thing. And Brendan made a decision years ago that when Lou moved on and Mark Hunter moved on, that Kyle was his guy. And that's a great position as a general manager to have that kind of loyalty from a president. But again, how can you decide 2 days after a season ends that, by all accounts, as incredible as your regular season was, the playoffs was not a success. That how have you really evaluated what change is out there to be made? So I think it's just doubling down on people you believe in internally, and good for Brendan for his loyalty.
Yeah, one team that didn't have patience was the Vegas Golden Knights. As you mentioned, they let go of Pete DeBoer, and before that, obviously going back to Gerard Gallant. There's some folks in Vegas, and I know in that fan base and media, they're saying, is patience something that this organization should have, especially when it comes to coaches? And given that they had lost 500 man games to injury this year, is that a team or an organization that requires a little bit more patience? Because it feels like they have the talent on the roster, Mike.
Well, unequivocally, they have the talent on the roster, and they've done such... I mean, I guess that's something you'd have to... And I mean, obviously, the owner there is a... You know, he got a taste of when you get that, your nose to the finish line in your first year as an owner, it probably, you have a different taste than anybody else could ever have. You see all these teams striving to win around, and then your first taste, you go to the finals. But you could argue that they did it with a group of, guys with 1 year remaining on their contract. Gerard did a wonderful job motivating them. They all had career seasons because they were playing for their futures. They rallied around an off-ice tragedy, and they had an incredible fan base. And at the time, they had one of the hottest goalies in hockey, and they upset everybody's turn-up card, and all of a sudden, the expectations changed. A lot of those guys that were on last year deals were shipped out. You see guys like David Perron still filling the net for St. Louis, and some of these guys that were part of their makeup, and some superstars were brought in, and they're incredibly great players, but it's pretty hard. And I'm a huge Pete DeBoer fan, obviously, from my Ontario Hockey League days. So I struggle when a coach basically had about four, you know, maybe five games of actually with his complete roster, a goaltender that, kind of was all over the map this year with injuries and stuff with and some off-ice things. And it's a tough thing to bring together all at once and to all of a sudden, you know, have a rookie in net when the biggest games are on the line and to fall short, I would certainly want to bring that coach back and give him a shot with the same roster. So obviously they know something that I don't. I would assume that's probably something, just as a fan on the outside, it seemed probably just something that might be an irreconcilable difference between the goaltender and the coach. And obviously a goaltender, a number one goaltender with that kind of term is probably going to win that battle. But there's that saying that a coach is not going to be unemployed very long. There's some openings right now, and I think a coach like Pete DeBoer and obviously a Barry Trotz are going to have their choice of the litter once they get over probably the scars of losing their current jobs, because that's clearly a place, even when you start sitting back from a hockey employment standpoint, being able to be in Vegas and the tax situation, the fan situation, the weather situation, that's a pretty special one. That's a pretty special one. But again, it's not going to get any easier. I mean, you see teams like, some of these teams are starting to recoup and start to show their fat. I mean, Los Angeles went through a long rebuild, and now you see the Canucks and stuff like that coming on. And in a division where they were kind of separated themselves as being the class of the division, and everybody kind of said, who's going to play Vegas in the final? They've got some teams chomping at their heels now, and it's going to be a real competitive basis moving forward.
Mike, you mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, how players in today's day and age are unlikely to take less, especially if you get full market value in UFA status or otherwise. Going back to your days in LA, because you had obviously a cup-winning team there, a very competitive team, you know, then versus now, the Canucks are kind of pondering with this question as well, this market is with Bo Horvat, will he take less? JT Miller, will he take less? How big of a difference is there from, you know, that generation of Kings teams in that era and players potentially taking less to where we're at now?
Well, our two stars didn't take any less. I mean, and in my opinion, they shouldn't have. I mean, they had earned their stripes, Drew Doughty and Angie Kopitar. Like, there wasn't one second when we sat down for negotiations where they were looking at the beach and the sun going, give me less. It was, they wanted their price and they got their price, and they had two Stanley Cups and their belt to go with it. So, in our case, it was kind of because, and this is where I mean, I guess the game has totally changed, and it's not like I think I'm some kind of old timer or anything, but just over the short period of time, like, we had made a conscious decision at the time to pay our guys for what they had done for us, our stars, our young stars. Like, they had won two cups. Clearly, they were surrounded by an incredible cast of veterans when you go back and look at the Justin Williams and the Matt Green and the Jared Stolls, and Jonathan Quick was the best goaltender in the world. He kind of showed flashes of that a couple weeks past, but it's like, we were so built for that. And Dean Lombardi and our group had done a masterful job of surrounding our young guys where they just had to play. And we had an incredible core leadership. And then we gave them their gold mine because they had won cups. Whereas some of these other teams now are being, you know, they have to pay the ransom for what these guys are worth as young stars before they've accomplished anything and other than individual accolades. And don't get me wrong, like, Austin Matthews is my favorite hockey player in the world right now to watch and on a nightly basis, but it's just different in the sense that they're paying the ransom to and still waiting for the, you know, other than all the individual accolades, to get the team accolades. And that's where it's changed in a certain sense, that it's like, hey, pay me now or you're going to lose me before we get our accolades. But the players have that right. It's just different. It's just really different. And I mean, the hometown discount thing, I think it's a thing of the past. I mean, I think you're seeing the only guy I know of it clearly is Jason Spezza, does it. And good for him. He's a Toronto kid and he's claimed again he'll never be on another team other than the Leafs. Good for him. I know Wayne Simmonds did it. He's at a different point of his career too. But I just don't see that. I think some of these players, that have battled hard, and especially the ones that have won, that have been loyal to certain markets and certain things, they have every, I guess the team we'll see now that's most, that's got that as far as UFAs, is we'll sit back and watch what happens with the Pittsburgh Penguins, knowing how much success those guys have had as a group, and knowing that, you know, clearly, you know, Malkin and Letang are up, and, you know, and whatever negotiations, they have the same agent, and clearly they've been a big part of everything they've done. And Sidney Crosby's got three more years, and they're certainly not going to want to rebuild when one of the best players the world's ever seen. They're going to try and construct a team that can win while he's still around. So it'll be interesting, those decisions. And I guess that's where the hometown discount thing will come into play. But I don't think it's something agents really have that in their vernacular.
Futes, we always appreciate it. We'll let you get an early start on The Catcher in the Rye or To Kill a Mockingbird, whatever you planned this summer.
It's strictly Manage Lamont. Lamont.
There we go. Thanks, pal. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Mike Fiuta, Sportsnet's NHL analyst, a longtime NHL exec and consultant with the Carolina Hurricanes.
And a huge fan of Diego Cervantes. Yeah. Massive. Massive.
Sancho Panza, is that the...
That's correct.
There you go.
That's correct.
I've never...
Very, very educated show we have on the People's Show.
Have you ever read Don Quixote?
I've read half of it. It's a long book, man. It's a long book.
How many pages?
That and Les Mis I tried to read once.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that didn't work out well either.
I might have to go pick up a copy of Don Quixote then.
Yeah, get ready to commit a year of your life.
Is it really like...
It's long, man. It's because by the time you read like a quarter of it, then you have to start all over again because you've forgotten what happened.
Oh, I've done that often with
books. Yeah, no, I do that all the time.
It was more than 1,000 pages long. All right.
Yeah, you're going to have to go on a long vacation to finish off that book. To like the most boring place ever. Winnipeg this summer.
I'll go watch Dallas Stars hockey.
Yeah. More entertaining. 1,000-page book or Dallas Stars hockey.
All right. We're a little late with it. But let's get to it. We do it every day here on The People Show. If you got a hot take, send it into the inbox right now, 650-650. Don't at me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't at me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said, what a hell.
Brought to you by LeaseBusters. Get out of your vehicle lease with ease, confidence, and a LeaseBusters leasing specialist to guide you through the journey. Go to leasebusters.com to start the process today. It's kind of a tame don't at me for me.
All right, what do you got?
The second round will not be as good as the first round.
That's generally the case, isn't it? That's pretty tame. You've been much more
hot-taking. The stakes get higher, and yet it ended so well for round one. We were talking yesterday, like game sevens. They were all of them,
yeah,
razor thin. That was a fantastic week in the Game 7s, and we're ending on such a high that round two, it's going to be tough for round two to top round one.
Okay, the matchups on paper look better than round one.
Facts.
Like,
facts.
On paper, they look amazing, but there's also the level of they might disappoint because the hype is so high. It's like the Irishman. Remember that? All that hype going into it, and you watch it, you're like, yeah, it was all right.
Entry points matter, man.
Okay. You know, the more I think about it, that's a hotter take than I thought. All right, I got one. And this is not even based on actual fact, but the fact that this popped up on my Twitter feed has ticked me off. Don't at me. As a Vancouverite, I'd be pissed if Ja Morant is on the cover of NBA 2K in a retro Grizzlies jersey. It popped up on my timeline earlier today.
Is it going down?
Apparently, it's on the table. Like, Jaw would make a lot of sense to be on the cover.
Sure.
But in that jersey, that just triggered me. I hold grudges, Vic. That jersey would absolutely annoy the hell out of me if it was on the cover.
Don't like it.
You know who'd like it? Satshaw, who has that jersey. Yeah. Traitor.
I was going to be.
Traitor.
I was like, you know what? We got to get to listener submissions. But, yes. Don't at me. Rager here. Brady Tkachuk jumps the glass to come help Matthew with Cassian.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
We're talking wrestling analogies? That'd be an unbelievable one. Unbelievable.
Tanbeer, don't at me. Canucks should trade for Sidney Crosby. I mean, yeah.
Who's going to say no to that? Oh, yeah. Ron Hextall.
No thanks. Man, odd story in Toronto, eh? AP and Langley. Don't at me. Marner getting carjacked will be the last straw for him wanting out of Toronto.
Man, that's so weird to see. But you know what? It's so strange, though, because in European soccer and, like, South American soccer, unfortunately, you see it all the time, where somebody's driving a really nice car, or maybe, in some cases, in European soccer, it's premeditated, right? They're trying to go after... I remember that a couple years ago, Mesut Ozil and Sead Kalasnic were in the same car, and they fought off guys on a bike, a motorbike. But still, you don't see that in the hockey world very often.
This is a 3-month-old don't at me. Evander Kane will have a bigger impact in the series than Tyler Toffoli.
Okay, this same texter texted in earlier and said, you guys laughed at me when I texted this in a few months back. I don't think it was doubting the player. It was the, will this individual have the impact on the team? Will Evander Kane figure it out and just really
buckle down
and have that impact as a team player? He has. He's been unbelievable. So I still lean Tyler Toffoli, though.
This one, Brandon Emission, understands the game. Don't at me. Calgary's asset management has been horrible. Even as a strong team, they've made 5 of their last 6 first-rounders, and only one, Tkachuk, played in the playoffs for them. The other first-rounder was traded for Travis Hamonic, and a pick turned into Noah Dobson.
I can't at that. But is their team in and around a Stanley Cup berth? It could be. It could be. Right? It's not why you play the game. Right, we got this one. Don't at me. The Blues will make it to the Western Conference Finals.
Well, we're going to do predictions on the other side. So there's an early prediction coming into our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Marcus and Gibson. Don't at me. JT Miller wouldn't have put any of the first round losers over the top.
Okay. Any of them, though?
So it,
like, if Pittsburgh had JT Miller when Sidney Crosby's not playing, I think he'd help.
I think if Dallas had JT Miller.
Yeah, but he'd play boring hockey then. Nobody wants that.
He would be the one of 4 exciting players on that team.
Yeah, but would he be playing the same style that we know of JT Miller?
Yeah, no, you want JT Miller to play on that team. Like, as JT Miller.
Okay.
I mean, they have Tyler Seguin.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Would Boston have won with JT Miller? Probably not. Washington? Probably not. Nashville?
No. Come on. Come on.
A couple more here on the other side. Don't at me.
We got this one coming in. Don't at me. Quinn Hughes is a Norris finalist next year.
I mean, he's kind of the youngest of the group there.
I can see it. I can see it.
He takes another step. This one. Next year, Buffalo snaps the 21-year playoff drought and beats the Maple Leafs in the first round. Leafs will announce they stay the course.
Things that will finally initiate change in Toronto. I feel like that's a wrong answers only. Buffalo beating them in the first round of playoffs would probably do it. It probably would do it.
Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin. They look pretty good there.
Yeah.
They're building something.
Even Casey Mittelstadt, they're trying to figure out how this kid will start going and, you know, turn into NHLer. A series against the Leafs. That'll get him going.
All right. We'll do more on the other side and make our round 2 predictions. Vic Nizar, Randy Janda, back in a moment here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People Show with Vic Nizar and Randy Janda.
Final segment of the People Show. Vic Nizar, Randy Janda, Jamie Dodd as well. We'll get to our playoff previews in just a second. We forgot to do a little house cleaning, or I forgot to do a little house cleaning, because we started talking about books and everything like that. We gave you turf trivia and then didn't give you the answer of the winner. For 2 tickets to the Black Keys on October 3rd, we asked you, who is the St. Louis Blues all-time playoff points leader?
The correct answer, the intoxicated man himself, Brett Hull. Okay. 117 points. Him and Bernie Federko are the only two that hit 100 points in that franchise history. And Brett Hull is number one. Shouts to Cam and Delta, who ends up winning the 2 tickets to the Black Keys show on October 3rd at Rogers Arena. And yes, Brett Hull did more than just get intoxicated. He was one of the greatest all-time scorers and the franchise leader with the Blues in playoff points.
Yes. But also when they won.
Oh, he was living his best life.
Living it up, man.
Heck of a hangover.
Tickets on sale again for the Black Keys now at Ticketmaster. Canucks.ca. All right. Round two predictions. Text them in, 650, 650. We'll do this east to west here. How do we do last round? Do we each go 6-2? Because you got Minnesota wrong.
Yeah, we were basically at almost at opposites.
We both got Boston wrong.
Yes.
You got Minnesota wrong.
Yeah, I got a lot wrong, Vic, is what you're trying to say.
No. I think you only got two wrong.
Let me see here. I'm looking at it right now. Got Tampa right. Got Florida right. Yeah, I think I got two wrong.
Yeah, and I think I got Dallas and Boston wrong with you.
Correct. So not bad, not bad.
We made it through pretty unscathed through round one. Shout out to us.
Yeah, we didn't win anything, but it's the street cred. We'll take that.
You know what? I just realized I think I picked Rangers.
I was going to say, you can tell how much these picks meant to you guys, based on the struggle to recall who you picked.
I just loaded up my bracket.
No, I got three wrong, being honest here.
Pittsburgh?
I picked Pittsburgh to beat the New York Rangers, if I'm not mistaken. And then also, I also picked the... two wrong. Yeah. You're right.
Okay.
Trust me. I'm looking at my
bracket. You're the producer. You should be writing these down.
No.
What are you laughing at? You're laughing at yourself, Jamie. Come on. All right. So.
They mean a lot to us.
Moving to this one. Let's start in Carolina. Carolina and New York.
I'm going against the Rangers here.
Okay. This is the one I'm the most nervous about. So I'm going to pick the Rangers. But I feel like it's either Rangers in 7 or Carolina in 5.
Okay, so it's either like Shesterkin is on his game or he's not and this series is over. So like kind of how the season went.
I have a big fear that this series is going to be a quick one.
Okay, the way that Carolina, and I know it was a home series essentially until the final game. You know, even the final game itself, Carolina won on home ice and got it done. I feel as though the way that they skate, the way that this team plays... Yeah, maybe I disrespected them too after the first, in the first round. I thought Boston was a tougher matchup. Took them 7. I don't like that matchup for the New York Rangers. This team plays fast. They're committed to their structure. They get good enough goaltending, and they don't offer up too much defensively either. I'm sorry, the Rangers are done in 5. I think Carolina is going to steamroll them and is heading to the Eastern Conference Final. The Rangers, maybe I'm sleeping on them because I don't think that they're all that strong. They're made better, with their acquisitions of Tyler Motte and Andrew Kopp and others. But the sheer skill in that top 6 from the Carolina Hurricanes, and yes, they've got some sandpaper there as well, which I discounted during the regular season. I'm going Carolina in the series.
All right, I'll back the Rangers here.
All right.
Here we are, opposed all over again.
All right. So I'm going with the team... the regular the stronger team in the regular season.
Tampa and Florida.
Oh, you know where I'm going with this. It's the Florida Panthers.
Now, you've picked them to go in the Cup, right?
Yeah, so I've got them in the Cup final.
I'm just going to keep backing Tampa Bay until proven otherwise. As nervous as I am about them after that first round, just got to keep going with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Okay, one question there is Braden Point.
Mm-hmm.
Is he playing tonight? Doesn't look like it. At what point does he play in the series? Because the longer it goes without that 1-2 punch, that's a problem, man. The Florida Panthers, you can say whatever you want about their defense, but coming back in games, they're capable of that. Tampa did have a little bit of trouble with Toronto in that regard, where, once it felt like the momentum was shifting in those games, Toronto looked better, and Vasilevsky had to be huge in that overtime game in Game 6, had to be huge in Game 7. Florida comes the same way. They come in waves. Can you handle that, especially without Braden Point?
I'm curious, though. I think Florida will have a tougher time defending than Toronto did. Because Toronto rather was impressive overall. They just, they honestly went up against the worst opponent. That in moments of pressure, no team is better equipped than Tampa Bay to navigate those moments of stress. And when they were under duress, they just knew how to deal with it. Got out of it, did the business, moved on. Based on what we saw between Washington and Florida, I think Toronto was the better defensive team versus Florida. And so if a few more seams open up for Tampa Bay, can they take advantage of that?
Who is the most important player in this series? I think it's Sergei Bobrovsky.
Sure.
Based on the fact that you do have wide open hockey from Florida. And at some point, you know, Tampa Bay, they can play two styles. They can play shot for shot if they have the horses to run, or they can lock it down. Bobrovsky's going to have to play really, really well in the series. And especially, you know, you look at the forward group, I would say in terms of sheer firepower, Florida has the advantage. They put up a record number of goals during the regular season. They're capable of doing that. Defensively, it's Tampa Bay. So who's going to be able to steal more games, Vasilevsky or Bobrovsky? This is a challenge for Bobrovsky. He's capable. But can he produce it in this series? It's going to be really, really important. That's the one guy I'm looking at. I still got the Panthers in seven, though. Hopefully this one goes seven. I think we'd all love this series to watch. Entertainment value all around.
I think this is going to be just as nasty as Battle of Alberta. 100%. You know, here in Canada, we probably want the Battle of Alberta to be as forceful and as physical as possible. And I think you'll get everything you want out of this series as well.
Okay, that's the hope. But I have a feeling that the Battle of Alberta, in terms of the recent chapter, peaked 2 years ago when Cassian Tkachuk happened. You don't have the same, like, animosity because Edmonton doesn't have the guys to match up against Calgary. So, yes, there's agitators, but in terms of sheer out violence or sheer, you know, hate,
right?
A couple of years ago, I think, was the peak. We'll see how, I mean, I might be proven wrong here.
Don't at you.
It's a seven-game series.
Yeah.
It could get nasty, but let's go back a couple of years ago. Cassian versus Tkachuk, man. That was like the NHL's version of the Royal Rumble. It felt like that.
Yeah. Colorado and St. Louis. So your Minnesota Wild did not advance.
No, they didn't.
And you would have picked Minnesota over Colorado, right?
Yes. They were a Western Conference final team to me. I like what St. Louis has done in these playoffs, and they absolutely smacked around the Minnesota Wild. But Colorado, I think that firepower, you know, St. Louis is not as strong as they've been defensively compared to previous years.
Mm-hmm.
They do have the offensive firepower. They've got the hard skill. But I think the high-end skill is going to rule the day here. This thing goes six games. I think St. Louis, in my opinion, does push them, does win two games. But Colorado, I think the time for them to finally move past this stage of the playoffs, it happens. St. Louis is a hard out, but I still think they get it past them. MacKinnon, Makar, next level. It's going to be more difficult than that first round, but I still think the Colorado Avalanche will win this.
You know who kind of woke up in the playoffs that I'm really pleased to see that he did? Because if you're concerned about certain things when it comes to St. Louis, what you need is defense. And Colton Parayko kind of waking up a bit, that's a big thing for me. Like, I'm such a fan of his game, and if he's dominant in the playoffs, because he's got a physical profile that is so massive, obviously a 6'6 guy, but he moves so well, and he knows how to, you know, play well positionally, use his body effectively. If he is the best version of himself, I really, really like the St. Louis Blues.
Are you going with the Blues here?
I've been saying it since January.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
I'm going to be back in the St. Louis Blues, and once again here, over the Colorado Avalanche.
All right. So you got the Blues going to the Western Conference Final.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Avs. Battle of Alberta. Who's it going to be? This is team superstar versus team depth. This is Vezina contender versus Mike Smith. Hey, man.
He doesn't even have a label. It's just his name.
It's Mike Smith. All right? Facts only.
The Mike Smith slander on the show from Randeep is so strong.
He had a great round, but he's going up against Jacob Markstrom.
Did he have a great round?
Save percentage amount, you know, suggests that he did.
Sure.
His save percentage, last time I checked, I think heading into Game 7 was a 931. So it was pretty good.
Okay. I'm going Connor McDavid. I'm back in the Edmonton Oilers here.
Okay, but how about if Leon's not right?
No, I'm aware Leon's right.
No.
Not right.
But how about if, like, that in this series, that would mean that McDavid has to go ham again. Like, full on, just putting up probably another 14 points.
Yeah.
All right.
And, like, what he did in Game 6 and 7, if I'm 31 GMs, I'm, like, sweating every day. It's like, man, we have to deal with that now. It's not even just, oh, he's great in the regular season, and it's a problem that he might put up 130 every year. But now he's doing it in the playoffs, and not even just scoring in the playoffs. Physicality, defense, just overall sharpness. Every great center in this league, and there's a few exceptions, I understand, but every great center, at some point or another, goes on a run, gets their cup. This playoff round, so far, is the start of, I think, Connor McDavid's perpetual existence in the playoffs.
Okay.
And the Calgary Flames, very strong team. When you have a guy playing at the supernova level that he is right now, he's just a cheat code. And as good as Calgary is, I don't know how you combat that. I think Colorado is better suited to deal with it. I think St. Louis is probably better suited to deal with it. I don't know if Calgary is.
Okay, and that's where we differ. I've got Calgary winning the series in six games. And the reason I think Calgary wins the series is, you know, we joked about the Dallas-Calgary series. And really, looking back at it, that matchup was probably the best thing that could have happened to the Calgary Flames. And the reason I say that is, you go into that playing a very, very conservative team that picks their spots and is committed to defense. They ran into a very hot goalie. This next series is going to feel a lot easier for the Calgary Flames. There's going to be more open space. Hey, if you were in the trenches in that Dallas Stars series, it's going to be wide open hockey in this series. And Calgary can play two ways. They can open it up or they can stay structured. But here's the difference. LA didn't have the offensive firepower that Calgary does. They had two Selke-level players combating Connor McDavid. And then what happened? He still torched him for 14 points. But here's the issue. Backlund, Lindholm also have been in the Selke discussion. One is a candidate this year. Backlund's gotten some love over the past few years as well. But here's how Calgary is different. They can actually put up points. They can actually roll four lines on you. They can actually put up points with, you know, if Tyler Toffoli or Mangiapane are playing on that second or third line, they got some punch there. So I look at this matchup to say Edmonton's got the superpower, like the superstar power. But Calgary, to me, it's hard to deal with this team when they're, you know, rolling three or four lines, and they're capable of winning that territorial battle. LA wasn't going to do that every single night. They couldn't punch you in the mouth and score goals on you consistently enough. I think Calgary can.
I'm going to be really interested to watch in this series Jacob Markstrom, because the volume versus Dallas wasn't necessarily there. How does that, because you're going to have to flip really quickly to a new opponent, and the capacity of opportunities is going to change, not just because, hey, it's not a weak offensive team, but it's also going from, you know, Tyler Seguin racing at you to Connor McDavid racing at you. And the volume of chances is going to increase. Now, traditionally, let's say, hey, goalies love to be active. Jacob Markstrom, we've seen here in Vancouver when he faces a lot of shots, can be successful. But the quick transition going from Dallas for seven games to what Edmonton is going to present and the different speed that they're going to play at, how does he transition? Is there a slip-up early on in the series, and is that a window there for Edmonton to take advantage of? That's something early in the series I want to keep an eye on, Jacob Markstrom.
Okay, one thing, though, if we go back to the regular season, though, the final few meetings, Calgary had no issues dealing with a fully healthy Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. They lit up the Edmonton Oilers to put up a 9-spot on them one as well. So
yeah.
I think the idea of, hey, can they play that faster game? They've shown it in the regular season. As long as Calgary stays healthy, I think they're fully capable of playing that style. We got a lot of bold predictions earlier on. Bobby and Richmond coming in with this one. Love this. Randeep, you know McDavid is going to get shut down by good Branson. You heard it here first. Bobby and Richmond coming with that hot take. Goody's played well, man.
I actively want McDavid versus Zadorov and good Branson shifts. Seems like a win for the Oilers.
Stranger things that... No, they haven't. That's a bold prediction. I'd love to see that matchup. They might find that one in Edmonton as well. We got this one coming in, unsigned. Bick, I'm with you. I got Edmonton to win the West. I got them at plus 900. Okay?
All right. Absolutely. Hey, wait, did you choose all the favorites and I chose all the underdogs?
I think so. So now we're going head-to-head. There's not and no commonalities whatsoever.
In all the series?
Exactly.
Oh. So
we'll see who comes through.
So last series was all about Dallas-Calgary. You and I.
Yeah.
And now it's all the series.
Okay. Friendly wager, perhaps?
No.
No? No.
What are we? Calgary and...
No, we can't. We can't be the mayors of Calgary and Edmonton. Although the face paint...
Poor Red Deer, by the way. Just stuck in the middle, like Switzerland. Like, hey, guys. The Switzerland of Alberta.
Poor Red Deer for a lot of reasons.
Come on, now.
There's Red Deer viewers on Hockey Night Canada, Punjabi. I'm going to sit this one out. Yeah, I'm going to sit this one out.
Nope. No happier place to be than stuck in the middle between Calgary and Edmonton.
What are they, Steelers wheel? Come on. Clowns on the left of them, Jokers on the right. Which one's which? We'll figure out after potentially seven games of this series.
Jamie doesn't speak for about 25 minutes, but when he does come in, the Red Deer slander was strong.
It drops hot fire, man.
My ears perked up there.
All right, we got to run here. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah coming up. Enjoy round two starting tonight. Bruce Boudreau will join the show at 4:30 here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. The opportunity to chew and laugh at the same time.